And to guess from the title, I will be talking about cosmological constant problem. And also, as you can see from the title, it's more like two talks in one, but I hope to make both. So just to remind you briefly what cosmological constant problem is, so let me say that we're quite confident now that the evolution of the universe on the very diverse scales now described by this equation, basically, where A is the scale factor, the size of the universe. And on the right-hand side, we have two different terms. So this first term over here, it basically something which walks and talks as usual matter. It clusters in galaxies. It has small positive pressure. Its energy density dilutes as the universe expands. And there is this other term, omega lambda, which behaves very differently. So it doesn't cluster in galaxies. It has large negative pressure, more or less equal to its energy density. Its energy density doesn't dilute as the universe expands. And the most natural thing would be to say that this is nothing but the vacuum energy. Vacuum energy would behave in this way. But the problem is, so we cannot really at the moment calculate vacuum energy because we don't have yet full theory of quantum gravity. But we can calculate different contributions to this quantity. And what we find, typically, there are contributions like hundreds of magnitudes above what we observe in nature. So it's a very dramatic breakdown of order of magnitude estimates. And it, and that's what cosmological constant problem is about. And there is a second aspect of this problem, namely, not only there is this tiny contribution, but also this contribution. So we happen to live in the very special epoch when these two contributions, they are comparable in size, but they evolve very different as time goes on. So one of them is dilute, another doesn't dilute. So that's another aspect of cosmological constant problem. And it seems that, so from all these years thinking about these issues, it seems that there are more or less two directions to go to understand what this could mean. So first direction would be to say, okay, that maybe it just it all indicates that we're trying to save the wrong equation by putting in corrections order one in it. In other words, maybe the gravity, the behavior of gravity at the largest scales is different from what Einstein's theory predicts. And also, let me remind you in this respect that also this matter contribution, actually most part of it is coming not from baryonic matter, but from supposedly some unknown massive particles. Yeah. Sorry?
This is supposed to be 0.7.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, omega meta is 0.3 and omega lambda, thanks, is 4.7. Okay. Actually, it was being discussed several times already. Nobody pointed this out. Okay. So that would be the first direction to go. And the second direction is what goes under the name landscape. And basically, it says that just this question of calculating vacuum energy is not a fundamental question of physics. And a good analogy for that is that for hundreds of years, people were trying to calculate, say, the ratio of the size of the Earth's orbit to Mercury orbit, and thought that this is a fundamental question which physics is supposed to address. But they realized there are many other stellar systems with different planets around it. And so at that point, they just stopped caring about this particular question and switched to other ones. So here an idea that there are many different vacuum in the universe, and we happen to live in one of them. And so physics is not what is the value of vacuum energy in our particular vacuum, but about some there are other questions we should address. So I think this, it's fair to say this is more or less the two options to go. And in my talk, I will try in concrete examples, and the choice will be obviously somewhat personal. So I will try to illustrate achievements and shortcomings of both approaches and kind of compare them. So let me start with modified gravity approach. And so, so this very roughly, this is what I did. A little bit less roughly, so the words which I usually said here is that there is something, some dynamics or some symmetry, maybe graviton compositeness, which somehow cancels, it shields this huge contribution from particle vacuum energy. It doesn't allow it to lead to the expansion of the universe. And this cancellation is either complete or at least down to the level which is required to the agreement with experiment. And then the observed cosmological acceleration comes either from the remaining part, which is remained unshielded, or really from modification of Friedman equation. And so right away, so one, it's clear that it doesn't sound too concrete at the moment. And actually, so different people, including people here, they're trying to dress these words with some set of equations. But to my opinion, at the moment, there is no really much more to this than this word. So there are some different sets of equations trying to make this concrete, but I don't think it's was very successful so far. So this is definitely the disadvantage of this approach. But on the other hand, it turns out that if you just so trying to forget about this original motivation, just you're trying to come up with a theory which modifies gravity at long distances while preserving its properties at short distances. It turns out just that consistency requirement makes it very hard to come up with a series of this kind. And that's kind of nice because then you can just follow the following strategy. Say, okay, let me forget about this original motivation. Let me try what are the consistent options at all to modify gravity at long distances and to see later whether it leads to something, some progress in the direction of cosmological constant problem. So that would be the approach which I follow in my talk. And finally, again, more or less by definition, is this approach you are guaranteed to have some new physics at long distance scales, at low energies. So you may expect rich phenomenology. So I'll try to illustrate now these two points. And the set of models I will choose to illustrate, they think, so one may call it massive gravity. So basically, or description gravity in the Higgs phase. So basically, it's an attempt to mimic in gravitational sector what we have already in gauge sector. We know that sometimes gauge symmetries, they're broken. So in gauge theory case, one starts with just adds mass for the vector field. So one can try to proceed in the same way with gravity. So in other words, let's start with this action. There is Einstein term, and let's just add another term, which is just a function of metric component and its derivative, non-covariant. So it's kind of mass term analog of m squared a mu squared for gauge theory. And at the moment, the only condition which I will impose that the flat or the sitter for most purposes of my talk that doesn't matter, solution is the space is actually a solution of this theory. Then if you expand around this background, you will find that metric perturbation satisfy equation where there is mass term coming from this second term here. Now, we know that in gauge theory case, when one tries to do something like that, is there a choke somewhere? Okay, so when one tries something to do something like that in gauge theory case, we know that if one look at the WW scattering amplitude, then it blows up at the scale MW over G. And so UV completion of this theory and this scale is what Higgs mechanism is about in gauge theory case. So in gravity case, just analogous power counting would say that the best one can do with this kind of theory would be to obtain effective theory valid up to this scale, which is square root of the Planck mass and the graviton mass. And if it were the case, it would be actually interesting because so naively you expect to be relevant for cosmology, you expect graviton mass to be around the size of the universe, then you would obtain the value of the cutoff the around 0.1 millimeter. And that's exactly the scale up to which gravity was probed at short distance experiments. So it's okay to have a theory, to have a cutoff in gravitational theory, in gravitational part of the theory at scales for this. And also this coincides with scale of cosmological constant problem. But as it turns out that even this first stage is rather non-trivial in gravitational theory. It turns out that typically theories of this kind, they break down at much lower scale and they obtain different pathologies. So in gauge theory case, it was trivial to obtain theory valid up to this scale. In gravitational case, it's not trivial. This first step to obtain theory valid up to this scale is already non-trivial. And so that's what I will be talking about. And basically, the way to avoid these pathologies would be to impose some extra symmetries. And the symmetry is a natural way to say what they are is to say that it may be that this term breaks part of gauge invariance, but preserves some subgroup of diffeomorphisms. And so the question one can ask, are there possible patterns of symmetry breaking such that one does obtain a good effective field theory description valid up to this scale without any pathologies? So this is the question. And just for those of you who are unhappy to dealing with non-covariant theory, I should remind that diffeomorphism variance, as any gauge symmetry, is just convenient redundance of the description. So there is a covariant way to formulate the same setup. Namely, what one does, one starts with a theory of Einstein gravity coupled to four scalar fields now. So this alpha index, alpha is internal index. Just this set of four scalar fields. And what one requires is there is a vacuum where, again, it's flat vacuum, but these scalar fields, they have vacuum expectation values proportional to space-time coordinates. So this is covariant theory, and it's equivalent to the theory on the previous slide, because now if you look at small perturbations around this vacuum, the theory is a gauge invariant, so you can fix the gauge. For instance, you can fix the gauge when scalar fields are not perturbed. And in this, so it would be analog of unitary gauge in gauge theory case. And in this way, you recover theory on the previous slide. So this is completely equivalent description. And actually, it's not just make you more comfortable. It's actually technically useful to analyze what happened to the theory, because all sort of source of troubles is coming from this scalar sector. And more than that, this description also provides a nice intuitive picture of what we're doing here. Namely, if you look at this Lagrangian, actually, this is nothing but a Lagrangian description of the relativistic fluid, or more general relativistic medium, with fields phi defining a map from the physical space to Kamuvian space of the fluid. So you may define, you may describe conventional fluids, or better to say superfluid, because there is a phi naught field with wave proportional to t. So you can define, describe conventional fluids in terms of these actions. So there is nothing unusual by this action per se, and by this having this vacuum expectation value. What is unusual is that I require that there is a fluid there, there are these waves, but the flat space, the space-time is flat. So it's a fluid which, in other words, this is a series of phonons which mix with metric perturbations and give rise to Higgs effect in this sense, but it doesn't curve the space. So there is no T mu, there is no energy momentum in the ground state of this fluid. And so this is really a physical property. So this is a property leading to understanding of all unusual properties of the system. So I won't go in detail. So let me just now tell you the answer. So what are the possible symmetry patterns which allow to avoid pathologies like fields with negative kinetic terms, like rapid instabilities in this fluid, and still having zero energy momentum tensor? So the answer in terms of this original non-covariant language, the answer is that you want to preserve part of different variants, which is either time-independent spatial diffeomorphisms or shifts of spatial coordinates by arbitrary time-dependent functions. And for those of you who are following the story, if you put and here, that would be the Gauss condensate theory. This was the first theory of this kind which was studied. And series I will be talking about, to a large extent, they have seen some of their properties are really, yeah. Yeah, it will be on this part of the slide. Yeah, just wait half a minute. So the first theory of this kind was Gauss condensate. But I will concentrate actually on this pattern on symmetry breaking, because in this theory, graviton is massive. So in the sense that gravitational waves are massive. So and that's will allow me to illustrate this point that there is interest in phenomenology potentially coming from this series. And on top of this symmetry, which comes just from self-consistency, I assume that there is extra symmetry, extra part of reparametrization variance, which is left, which is this one. And one motivation for doing this, in particular, if you look at the cosmological solutions in this series, then this dilatation, this kind of dilatation symmetry, they get restored at late times of cosmological evolution. Well, in principle, you can just impose it by hand. And gamma here is a parameter, so you can choose. It defines your symmetry breaking pattern. So this is a parameter. So okay, and just to show you that there is explicit action which so looks like this. The symmetries, they fix that it depends basically the one derivative level depends on a single combination of these four scalar fields, which okay, they're a little bit large, but okay, this is some kind of sigma model, we may call it like that. And the only, so at this level, the only non-trivial requirement for this function f is that it should have a minimum at some value, and this minimum will be a vacuum of the theory. In particular, cosmological attraction will attract you to this point. And so for those of you who are familiar with Gauss condensate, this is really very similar to that, but just you have extra fields phi I with vacuum expectation values proportional to spatial coordinates. Yeah.
If you deliver a mass term like that, then the longitudinal parts propagate to risk severe instability.
Yeah, so they're actually, they're not quite propagating. So basically, this theory, these symmetries, these residual symmetries, they ensure that out of this, so naively you expect to have four new propagating degrees of freedom coming from these four scalar fields. But these symmetries, they're enough to ensure that out of these four, three are actually non-propagating. And so you obtain extra one new scalar degree of freedom, which is the same as in Gauss condensate theory. And so in that way, the series, the symmetries protect you from getting the severe instabilities. They prevent this would-be propagating degrees of freedom to become propagating. So that's the way how it works here. That's basically what the reason to choose the symmetries. So to keep this dangerous degrees of freedom non-propagating. So let me now just list you the properties of this model. So first, so this four first properties, they were more or less built by construction. So there are no rapid instabilities. So there is this VDVD discontinuity. The same is to say that there is smooth limit when graviton mass goes to zero. You may have heard that there is no, in massive gravity, there is no smooth limit for graviton mass going to zero. It's true in Hertz-Pauli theory, and it's again related to these pathological properties of this scalar sector. But this series, by construction, they were built to reproduce, to have smooth limit as mass goes to zero. Also, again, this was the choice of model. The gravitational waves are massive here, and cutoff scale is this square root scale. Now, these two last properties, they come out, so this was put in. And these two last properties, they came out as a result of analysis of these models. So first, they said tensor modes are massive here. But it turns out that at least at the linear level, scalar and vector perturbations, they obey the same equations as in general relativity. In particular, in spite of having tensor mode, which is massive, there is 1 over r Newton's law in this theory. So that one property, and also cosmological solutions, flat cosmological solutions, are almost the same as in GR. And it's not very surprising in this fluid language. At the end, all what you did, you just added some fluid with exotic properties. But you're not surprised very much that cosmological solutions are very close to those of GR.
In this case, the mass of graviton is not Lorentzian gravity.
Yeah.
So is this something that could be, so what's the relation between the fact that in this, so how do I see easily that I cannot get the Lorentz invariant mass term? Maybe it's a naive question.
No, you can get Lorentz invariant. You can also, in this language, you may describe, you may also have Lorentz invariant mass. And this would, in this pi language, in the scalar field language, that would impose, you would impose a symmetry, Lorentz symmetry acting on the extra global symmetry acting on the phi field. You would write Lagrangians which have this Lorentz symmetry acting on the phi fields. And that's already kind of telling you that this is not a good thing to do because you have non-compact global symmetry acting on your fields. And that leads to Gauss degrees of freedom, to degrees of freedom with negative kinetic term. So you may describe in this language Hertz-Pauli theory, but just they do not satisfy these four properties on that. Yeah.
The equation of state?
The equation of state for
what?
You say
it's an
exotic
property?
Yes, exotic property, that's it's equation of state is basically that of vacuum. So that was definite. Have T mu nu, zero, or generally proportional to vacuum, vacuum equation of state. So, yeah.
How do you impose these symmetry conditions, which are crucial to avoid Gauss instability in the longitudinal part? Because in general, when you write down the action, if you do a Cauchy evolution, it's very difficult to keep these symmetries in place all the time.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understood your question. So I'm just imposing this, so I'm in this non-covariant language, so You add some term in your action, which it breaks part of the diff invariance, but just impose that it preserves the subgroup of the whole representation invariance. So it's not related to the way to how solution this theory works. You impose it at the level of the action. So you just impose that this thing is invariant under some subgroup of the full parameterization group. And the level of this scalar fields, that restricts that the action just at the one derivative level is function of this single combination, which appears here. Yeah?
The fact that you have a minimum of f.
Sorry, so say it again?
The property that t mean equals 0, that is that the variation of the extra term with the metric being 0 is just because you're at a minimum of f.
Yeah, it's only, so it's t mean equals 0 only in the ground state. So if you perturb, then you will start,
right,
there's
but,
some.
But you could have, that doesn't very tightly constrain the other forms. Because you
yeah, so
the first derivative.
Yeah, so t mu, so the condition, so what t mu equal to 0 condition gives you that this function should have an integral minimum. But the fact that, but now if you study perturbations around this minimum and impose that there are no pathological perturbations having this rapid instabilities, you see that the way to achieve this is to preserve this extra symmetry. And they in turn constrain your action to depend just on this combination.
So, have such theories in which have those properties t mu equals 0 and no extra instabilities?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is the only, so you should have either this or this kind of symmetries. Yeah. So there may be some extra symmetry, like here I imagine some extra symmetries, but they should contain either this or this, because that what allows you to avoid this mode to become propagated in this extra mode. Okay.
Does that mean so in the Schwarzschild solution that the correction to Schwarzschild from this is really suppressed in a naive way? Like
actually Schwarzschild, there is Schwarzschild solution in the theory which is exactly, there's just unperturbed, yeah, there is just unperturbed Schwarzschild solution in this theory. So it goes even on the nonlinear level. But I have more to say about that, but so now let me say what this all must mean in case of cosmology. So this is a cosmological ansatz for this theory. So field phi rolls down and you obtain Friedman equation, but there is extra contribution to this equation coming from this fluid, which is there, from the fact that it's displaced from the minimum. And depending on the choice of the parameter gamma for symmetries, in principle that can be source of vertex source of cosmic acceleration. And something very interesting happens for special choice gamma equal 1/3. Namely, then this extra contribution it also looks like a cosmological constant. So it seems to be a boring case, but interesting point that this value of cosmological constant is not determined by parameter in your Lagrangian. Instead, it's determined by the initial condition of this phi zero field. So it's a bit ironic. So you started with modifying gravity, but you ended up with something which looks like a landscape because now there are solutions with different value of cosmic acceleration in different parts of the universe. But on the other hand, one may hope maybe this is first step to something more dynamical, but I have nothing more to say at this stage. So this is the property of cosmological solutions in this series. And so the main conclusion to be drawn from what I said before, one of the main conclusions is that there is a room for gravitational waves to be really heavy, to have a huge mass. By huge, I mean on the cosmological time scale, on the cosmological scales, because it will be tiny on the particle physics scales, but it will be huge on the cosmological scales. And the reason of that, because so the dominant source of bounds on this series is coming from the properties of tensor modes of graviton, which we don't know that good yet. So what we know from measurements of binary pulsar timing, this is measurement which received Nobel Prize, so that we directly know that there are gravitational waves with period of 4 to 10 hours. So it means that the mass of the gravitational wave cannot be larger than that. And so it corresponds to Compton wavelengths 100 times the distance from the Earth to the Sun. So it's, of course, it's very small mass on the particle physics scales, but it's huge mass as far as cosmology goes. And so there is a number of more or less obvious predictions which you can obtain from this for gravitational wave experiments. For instance, you predict a sharp cutoff in the gravitational wave spectrum at the value of the mass. Also, if you have a source which emits both in the gravity waves and in optics, then like supernova explosion, then you predict a time delay between gravitational wave signal and optical signal. Also, if the mass of the graviton, if it's not that large, but if it's a region of the order of the size of the universe at recombination, you may define the spectrum of B mode in CMB. So I will just show you. This would be the standard spectrum, and this solid line is for graviton mass for the age of recombination. And that's kind of interesting because it's very hard to change gravitational wave spectrum from CMB, because gravitational waves, they do not interact much with matter in the universe. So it's very solid predictions of all inflationary theories, the shape of the spectrum, not the amplitude, but the shape. And here there is really room to obtain some exotic spectrum because you're changing the properties of gravitational waves. So, yeah.
You have other degrees of freedom here than just massless spin 2, or sorry, massless spin 2.
Yeah, so the only other degree of freedom which you have. Yeah, so but as three of them are made non-dynamical by these residual symmetries. Okay. So three of them actually don't correspond to propagating degree of freedom. And there is one which has the properties, more or less the same properties like cos condensate. So it's something which has dispersion relation e squared before k to the 4 or lambda squared. So it's something very slow. And actually, there is not much interest in physics coming from this degree of freedom.
So it doesn't get radiated.
It doesn't get radiated strongly because it's something very slow. It's because it becomes dynamical only due to higher derivative terms in the action. So it's suppressed by the cutoff. If you notice only high derivative terms, then it has just distortion relation e squared equal to zero. In that sense, it doesn't propagate. It's not placed. There's a story for this degree of freedom is the same as for Gauss condensate. So these are some more or less straightforward consequences of this series. So I will spend some more time on another one because I think it nicely illustrates the point that we know very little yet about gravitational wave properties in GR directly, I mean from field measurements. And to explain this property, so let's think what would be the story of these light massive gravitons in the early universe. And actually, the story is very similar to the story of axions of any light particles. So if you have metric perturbations originally, then it remains frozen as soon as the Hubble is higher than the mass of the graviton. It remains constant. But when the value of Hubble drops below the mass, now it starts oscillating. So roughly, you're producing these massive particles at rest. They're produced non-relativistically, and they behave like basically like cold dark matter. The clustering galaxies, and the relic abundance is fixed by the initial perturbation, so it's model dependent in this sense. So this is here I calculated for some model of inflation. It was basically hybrid inflation with Hubble approximately constant during inflation, and so by construction, this value of Hubble should be below lambda is the cutoff of the series. So Hubble should be below lambda. So this ratio equal to 1 would correspond to initial metric perturbation order 1. So it's the edge of validity of perturbation theory. So you see from here, so you easily can get huge abundances, but OK, close to 1. So this should be closer than 1. So it's easy to get large abundances of these particles in the universe. But so to a large extent, it's similar to axion. The only difference is that this particle, this is gravitational wave. So it will be directly detectable by gravitational wave detector. And in particular, it will produce a monochromatic signal with frequency equal to the mass of the graviton, because you're producing these guys at rest. And then they have velocity dispersion of 4 to the 10 to -3, the velocity of dark matter in the Hubble. So this is the exclusion plot. So this violet region is excluded. So on the horizontal axis, I plot mass of the same, the frequency of the signal, and here the amplitude of the signal. So this violet region is excluded by binary pulsar measurements. So this red region is excluded by another pulsar experiments. So by using pulsars are the most precise clocks which we have in nature. And by checking how precise they are, you can put a limit on the stochastic gravitational wave background. So this region is excluded by these measurements. All the green region is allowed, and these dashed curves are sensitivity. This blue dashed curve is sensitivity of the laser detector, which is being planned. And this red dashed curve is sensitivity of ongoing pulsar timing measurements from Australian pulsar timing array. So they're collecting data right now. And in principle, so surprisingly, at the moment there is even a rule for a signal in this range, so in this frequency range, where all dark matter would be done, would be made of these massive gravitons. And so for me, it's not more like you should be very serious about thinking that this is a dark matter candidate. Okay, it is a dark matter candidate, and it's definitely testable dark matter candidate. So maybe you can already rule it out or find it by with existing data from millisecond pulsar timing. But it's more really a characterization of how little we know directly about properties of gravitational waves. So it's not excluded yet that this whole dark matter is done of massive gravitons, so we will not notice it. Although it's many orders of magnitude above the sensitivity of the planned experiment. So there is there really windows which were not looked at all in this area. So, okay, so this was to illustrate that there are really a lot of fun phenomenology to do with these models, and one can do more about that. But I think this, for me, the main issue at the moment is the following. So, okay, these are effective field theory description, which looks, so they look like it appear to be consistent effective field theory, free of obvious pathologies. But the question, can one really derive this kind of hydrodynamics from some microscopic quantum theory? And one may ask, why not? And so this would be a very simple example of a theory which looks fine at the level of effective field theory. So this is a theory of single scalar field, which shift invariants act in the scalar field. And the only non-trivial point about this theory, so there is this higher order operator with minus sign in front of it. And when one starts looking at this property of the theory, one finds, first of all, that because of this minus sign, the 2-to-2 scattering amplitude in this theory doesn't have analytic properties which are supposed to hold in any S-metric theory with usual causality and multiplicity. No, so this is just here. It's Minkowski vacuum. This is just theory where you have vacuum, Minkowski vacuum, and you have scalar field which doesn't have any wave, and it has this sort of interaction around this vacuum. So I'll have to say more about it. No, this is just an example. So this is just an example of the theory which looks fine at the level of low energy effective field theory. But if you look more carefully, did you find that it's very hard to, if possible at all, to be completed. So there, this is one point about this theory. Also, if you look at the, there are backgrounds in this theory which allow excitations propagating outside light cone. And even more worse than that, you can construct backgrounds which seem to be in the, within the regime of validity of effective field theory, but they have closed time-like curves. So it's saying, so it's, okay, minimally it's saying that if this theory can be UV completed, it would be something really very unusual, nothing like any conventional quantum field theory or string theory in the regimes we understand it. Or, but actually, this presence of closed time-like curves is more like indication there is some new IR physics which is missing here, which gets rid, which we should probably get rid of this closed time-like curve if there is a way to embed this theory at all in a microscopic. Yeah.
When you plot the full f of x or whatever f of z, so is it like those comments say that really, if you look at some field value up here on the f of x, you look at perturbations, they're ghost-like on one side and healthy on the other?
You mean the both comments say?
Yeah,
the Gauss condensate case, yeah, there is,
right.
There is Gauss here.
Left side, yeah. On the entire left side.
No, not on the entire. So Gauss appears somewhere here.
Okay.
And so basically what we are saying is, so your effective field theory is description in the vicinity of this vacuum. And you expect that if there is UV completion of this theory, then just something, because this theory becomes strongly coupled as you approach this Gauss region. So you just expect that This description breaks down there, and there's some other description.
Right.
If there is UV completion of this theory.
Okay, do you say there's still some finite region?
Yeah, but still there is a large region around this point where you have good effective field theory. Yeah.
Yeah. Presumably, if you compute the Hamiltonian of this theory, it's not bounded from below because of that sign.
If you compute. But again, at the level of effective, so this vacuum, this Minkowski vacuum is stable. So if there is any unboundedness, it would appear energy scales for the lambda, where you're not really, this was supposed to be effective field theory, which is
So you are just analyzing the Hamiltonian, so you just compute the Hamiltonian.
Not necessarily classically, you just studying.
Sure, but if you compute the Hamiltonian isn't bounded from below.
But it is bounded from below in the regime where this theory is supposed to work. So it is the theory is supposed to describe dynamics around phi equal to zero with d mu phi smaller than lambda, much smaller than lambda. If you restrict yourself to these configurations, you don't run into the problem. So it's another way of saying that this is effective field theory. And now you may hope that maybe any effective field theory, if you write principles, there are terms with higher derivatives acting on phi, like second derivatives. And if you naively calculate Hamiltonian, in this case, it will always be unbounded from below. But you know, it's not a problem just because the moment you reach this negative energy configuration, the theory will be completed to something else. But this argument shows that it's not possible.
Sometimes,
yeah. So this argument shows that this sometimes is not guaranteed. So in principle, there are restrictions on effective field theory which you're allowed to write. And just so maybe you don't care about this zero single scalar field, but I just mentioned that there is much better known example of a theory, which is interesting theory of modified gravity, the GP model. This is Brayboat theory, trying to modify gravity at large distances. But there is the same kind of issue there. So there is a scalar mode, which is basically bending of the brain, which has very similar behavior in this theory. But coming back to the theory I was talking about, actually there, in a sense, there are way too unconventional to start with to be killed by arguments like that. Because these arguments were relying on the fact that you have Lorentz invariant vacuum. So you study this, for instance, properties of scattering amplitude is a Lorentz invariant vacuum. Or this construction of closed time vector was relying on the fact that you have Lorentz invariant vacuum where you have blobs of the scalar field. So it's important that there was Lorentz invariant vacuum. So, Mike? Yeah.
Can you go back to the slide? I'm still confused.
Yeah.
So you're trying to make a statement about whether these theories you're describing can be UV completed by looking at this toy example.
But yeah.
You're looking at a scalar field with normal.
This example was meant to illustrate that. So there are situations where we know that effective series cannot be UV completed.
Okay.
But so what I'm saying now actually is this.
Because your thesis is very different.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying here. So this series, this massive gravity series, something is Gauss condensate, etc. They are very unconventional to start with. They are already start by assuming that there is no Lorentz invariant vacuum. So none of these arguments of the kind presented on the previous two slides can be used to say that this series cannot be really completed, because they are really very wild from the very beginning. But the closest shot of characterizing why it's hard nevertheless to if we complete this theory, I'm aware of it's related to the following. So again, by definition, this series they were meant to describe fluid with zero energy momentum. But now, if you look at the perturbation of this fluid, that more or less immediately implies that there are perturbations which can go either way. So rho plus p can be positive and negative for phonons propagating this fluid. So it means that you can violate null energy condition, or less fancy way of saying the same thing, that the object with negative gravitational mass in this series, and that's something very dangerous to have in a series with gravity, because in gravity, usually we have black holes. Now, if you have a black hole and you have an object with negative mass, then you can throw in this object into the black hole, and you are left with the ground state. But to start with, black hole had entropy. This stuff had entropy. So what happened with entropy? And we know that second law of thermodynamics, it basically follows from unitarity of quantum theory. So you are not supposed to. But
because you say now you're saying you can have perturbations that have negative energy within the realm of your effective theory.
No. So the point is that if you look in the vicinity, there are two energies here. There's gravitational energy, particle physics energy. In other words, there is mass of the object, and there is a charge which is related to shift symmetry of the scalar field, and there is some combination of these two which is positive definite and which ensures that there is no instabilities. But on the other hand, arbitrary small fluctuations around this vacuum, they may have negative gravitational mass. So it's, they're not related to any stabilities, but just they have negative mass. They violate, for instance, null-energy condition. And that's more or less inevitable consequence of this series from definition. You are looking for something which has diminuing the ground state, and still there are waves propagating on this ground state. There are phonons. So that may sound a little bit vague, but actually, this series are nonlinear, so you can look at the really much detail, look at black hole solutions. And for instance, you find that there are black hole solutions in the series where black hole have different horizons of different size. So, and that's more or less consequence of spontaneous breaking of Lorentz invariants. The direct effect of breaking of Lorentz invariants, that field can propagate with different velocities in Minkowski space. And here you can answer the question, what happens in the black hole background? It turns out that these fields will see still Schwarzschild metric, but with different horizon sizes. And that allows really construct some small perpetual mobiles. So I won't go in much detail, but so it's, you can make it very sharp, the conflict with second law of thermodynamics. So what would be a conclusion of this? So first of all,
I don't really remember your talk, but you have to get these foundation of second law, you have to couple the
you have to couple
ways.
Yeah,
so it's not like it's automatic.
Now if you look at the matter field, it would be coupled in principle to Gauss condensate field with operators. So roughly they will see metric, which is not just Einstein metric, but there will be corrections like that. And I see no symmetry which protects you from generating high derivative operators of this kind. So the correction can be small. So for instance, they can be suppressed by Planck. This sense, in this way, it's just mediated by gravity. They will be suppressed by Planck. In this way, you're avoiding all problems with tests of Lorentz invariants for looking for this kind of effects. But still, I see no way you can get rid of these corrections. There's no symmetry which protects you from generating them. So it seems to be an inevitable consequence of this series. So there are two ways out which I see. So first would be conclusions that just the series make no sense. So there's no way to derive them from consistent microscopic theory. But there is a way out. It would be black holes. So if there are basically no black holes here. If black holes have hair, so in all this construction of perpetual mobiles, there is some stuff goes into the black hole, some stuff goes out, such that the mass of the black hole remains constant. And if black holes doesn't have hair, so you're led to contradiction with second law of thermodynamics. But if have hair, if you roughly can look inside the black hole and see that its composition changed, then there would be no contradiction. And actually, it turns out that in this series, in some class of this series at least, there are hair. So roughly, black holes, they behave really like black objects here. So they don't emit light. But for instance, all higher gravitational moments, they're not fixed by mass and angular momentum, but they're completely free parameters. They're fixed by boundary condition and singularity in this series. And this potentially interesting observationally, because this gravitational wave detector, LISA, another thing which it will do, it will restart precision black hole physics by looking at the stellar object falling into galactic-sized black holes, you can reconstruct with high precision the metric around black holes. And they claim that there will be hundreds of such events per year, and for different black holes in different galaxies, it will be possible to reconstruct up to six, seven multiples of the metric with a precision at level 1%. And there are some people saying that this is actually pessimistic, but it's good enough for me. So the question is it theoretically motivated by anything? Are there any, what do we test here? Because this is for largest scale black holes, so it's very hard to come up with a model which changes something here and preserves success of gravity at shorter distances. And at the moment, so this kind of models, I think this is the only framework which allows you to do that. So basically the answer is that you are testing Lorentz invariants here, that it's not spontaneously broken. And it's kind of intuitive because this is the physics of horizons. But okay, so I think at this point I'll stop with this modified gravity part of my talk. Is there any questions? Time to ask.
About stability would be resolved if you could just calculate the Hamiltonian form and calculate the ADM energy and find out if there's a positive theorem.
No, so that's it. There is an energy which is positive. So this is what I was calling particle physics energy. Unless you look at the perturbations which go very, very far away from this vicinity of the vacuum. But for these post perturbations, you normally you're saying that you don't expect your effective field theory to break down. So according to standard rules how you operate with effective field theory, this effective field theory is stable. And so, but the question is whether it can really be.
But I mean, it's a mathematical object, it's a classical field theory.
It's a classical field theory. It's a classical field theory that's stable, yeah. But that happens only for perturbations. In other words, there are infinite number of high derivative terms.
For example, are there solutions which look like negative mass Schwarzschild outside and then something non singular with the scalar fields on the inside?
Yeah, I would expect, but actually, so again, there are two questions whether there is. So, negative gravitational mass or unbounded Hamiltonian. So there are configurations which have negative gravitational mass in this series, but still they're positive. There's some different energy which is combination of this gravitational mass and the shift charge.
But since the original theory has different morphism bands, before you break it,
yeah.
The Hamiltonian has to be of the form with appropriate boundary conditions of constraints plus an avian mass at the boundary. So the Hamiltonian is the gravitational mass,
theory. No, but there is another kind of charge here. So in order for a system to be stable, this system can be stable even if Hamiltonian is unbounded from below, if there is extra kind of charge such that combination of Hamiltonian and this charge is actually.
What gauge variance is that charge a consequence of?
It's a consequence of the phi goes phi plus constant. It's a consequence of shift invariant section of scalar field. And in the non-covariant language, in the unitary gauge, it's just what you would call field energy. It's one consequence of invariance under T plus constant. So in that sense, this is really particle physics energy. This is another charge related to time translations. Yeah.
The issue that Lee has raised, if you take your original action, you break the symmetry in order to avoid longitudinal instability.
I bought the symmetry.
So what you have to do is to write down the action. The symmetry built as a constraint. And when you do that, you will find, when you do a constraint analysis, that the Hamiltonian is unbounded from below. It's bottom line. Which means the theory is sick.
No, again.
Because you don't have a vacuum stability.
No, again, vacuum is stable. Vacuum is stable under small perturbations. Hamiltonian is unbounded for below for small perturbations. There are big perturbations which may lead to instability, but that's always the case with effective series.
Small thing.
No, small, it's well defined. There is a cutoff in the series, so there is a scale which tells you which perturbations you trust and which you don't trust. So, here. It's, in that respect, it's not different from any other effective field theory, like from pi and sigma model.
So what's the conclusion for the shielding of the vacuum energy? Are you sorry by saying let's ignore that, but let's explore these.
Yeah, so the best I can say about that at the moment, so there are these potentially interesting properties of cosmological solutions, like that function in this sense becomes dynamical. But yeah, I have nothing more to say about that. But in a sense, that's a unique question, so maybe this is a sign that there's something dynamical goes on here, but I think to figure it out, we need to know really the completion of these models. But yeah, I have nothing to say more about that. So there is something which may be interesting, but yeah. So okay, let me switch now to the second topic of my talk. So this is landscape as different people see it. And I said that basically an idea is that there are different regions in the universe with different value of the vacuum energy. And there is nothing special about our region apart from it's suitable for the light the way we are. And so we just should think about different questions apart from not calculating vacuum energy now. Vacuum. But the problem, so, and in the first approximation, this not solved, it eliminates cosmological constant problem. It tells you that this is not an interesting physical question to address. But there is immediate problem with this proposal that actually all these different regions, at least in the picture we have at the moment, they're causally disconnected from each other. All these pocket universe, they're really, they're not, you cannot, if you live here, you don't know, you can have no way to check if there are other regions out there. And so, So they said that advantage of this proposal is provides zeros or the intuitive picture of how cosmological constant problem is get rid of. But the consequence of this, that you're forced to talk about causally disconnected regions, the consequence first that it's extremely hard to confirm this picture even in principle. Now, nobody promised that doing physics should be easier, so that it should be easy to check our theories, but it's better if they're checkable at least in principle. And so it's very hard to confirm this picture if it's right. But also there is a nice point that this very property, it's actually extremely hard to really make sense of this picture at the theoretical levels. Very hard really to define what are the observables, what would be around of this matrix elements, what theories from such spacetime is supposed to calculate. And so this theoretical problem suggests that maybe there is a room for surprises if we understand what really understand what's going on here. And maybe when we understand what's going on here, we'll find the correct set of observables which is supposed to be calculated in the series. So let me now try to illustrate these two points. So first of all, as far as confirmation, observational confirmation goes, I think at the moment the best we can do is just to be very cautious and collect all possible indirect evidence for this picture. And so the exercise we did in this direction was to try to see whether there is any hint of this huge landscape of vacua in the known low energy physics which we see around us, which we know. So we took standard model action with gravity, standard model particles, the parameters and vacuum energy. And we tried to mimic what we are doing in string theory, namely, okay, this is four-dimensional theory. Let's look where there is landscape of vacuum where some of our spatial dimensions are compact. So let's try to compactify one of our dimensions and see whether there are any new vacuum emerging this way. So the convenient way to describe this is to, in terms of effective three-dimensional theory, so you have radion, which is the size of one of our dimensions, and you are looking for non-trivial minima, the radion potential. So, and at the classical order, the radion potential, it looks like this. So it's runaway potential, and this is contribution coming from cosmological constant. And in a natural world where lambda is a four-dimensional plane, this would be more or less end of the story up to very, very short distances here where quantum effects become important. But we live in a world where lambda is fine-tuned to be very small, and as a result, quantum effects have a chance to compete with this leading classical effect. And we know this quantum effect. This is basically the Casimir energy due to the fact that one of our dimensions is compact. And at largest values of the radius, the relevant contribution to Casimir energy comes from bosons, from massless particles we have around. There are two quantum and graviton polarizations. And so they contribute with minus sign to the Casimir energy, and as a result, potential takes this form. Now, as you go, it's even shorter radius of the radion, it's even shorter sizes of extra dimensions, of our compact dimension. So now there are fermions, neutrinos, that is the next lightest particle in the world, and they contribute with the opposite sign. So, and there are three generations of neutrinos, so if neutrino Majorana, that means there are 6 degrees of freedom, so the wind over boson bosonic contribution, you get this new minimum here. But actually, one should be somewhat more careful because neutrino mass scale is of course a cosmological constant scale. And just to illustrate you, so actually what matters, because there are 4 bosonic degrees of freedom, what matters is the mass of the second lightest neutrino. So if, for instance, first 2 generations of neutrino were massless, you would have a picture like that. So they would cancel the contribution of bosons too early, and you wouldn't develop a maximum in the first place. So depending on the value of the second lightest neutrino mass, there are different options. You can have no minimum at all, you can have the Sitter minimum, you can have ADS minimum. And we don't know the absolute value of the masses, but we know the limits on delta X squared, on the mass splittings. And that's enough to put a lower bound on the second lightest neutrino. And it turns out that so it's heavy enough, so it's mass larger than the 1/r, this scale of this maximum here, so that at the end you do obtain minimum. But so to illustrate you how sensitive this is to values of the neutrino masses, so here I have shown the radiant potential for several values of delta m squared. So this red line, this minimum somewhere here, this is what happens in our world. But if you change delta m squared by factor of 8, which corresponds to factor of 3 change in the value, absolute value of neutrino masses, then you lose this minimum at all. So somehow, since that nature worked really hard to get this minimum, I don't know whether it's something fundamental about it, or maybe just curiosity. But also, so I would like to mention it's not really one minimum. There's something which you call really call a landscape. It's there is a direct, almost flat direction associated to this minimum, because you can turn on what string theories would call a Wilson line of the photon, which is just Aronoff Bohm flux through this compact direction. And so it's another modulus in the game, and it receives tiny contribution from its potential from loop of electron going around this compact dimension. But so this, it's really very, very flat potential, because so it's set by the ratio of the electron mass to neutrino mass. And so sometimes string theory is blamed that that many vacua there and all these flat directions because of supersymmetry. So this is an example when, so first of all, this is really a theory which describes our world. But second, so there is flat, almost flat direction. It's flat for all practical purposes. There is flat direction here, which has nothing to do with supersymmetry. It's consequence of another, just of locality. And so again, I don't know whether there is something fundamental about it, or just definitely it's encouraging that we find in the real world something, features which we expect to be in the string theory. But also, I would like to stress here. So yeah, so all these calculations, it relies on effect, quantum effects calculable in IR. There is no assumption about UV physics here. So in that sense, the standard model-like landscape, it exists in the real world. So we just, so the question is, what is the lesson to draw from it? And so another thing I would like to mention, so one may say, okay, who cares? We don't live in this vacua. Maybe these are like different superselection sectors, which are not connected to each other. So I may ask, are there domain wall solutions connecting this vacuum and our vacuum? And to see that there are, so let me remind you the geometry of extremal Reissner-Nordström black hole. This is a spatial geometry of charged black hole, and it looks like asymptotically flat space. But when you go in the vicinity of horizon actually for extremal solution, it's an infinite distance from you. So you find this compact space there, it is two crosses two space, which is nothing but another compactified vacuum of our space supported by electric flux. So analogy to this, you expect that there are actually black string solutions interpolating the strings, because now it's gonna mention one compactification. And indeed, we found this solution. So there are these solutions which interpolate between our vacuum and this neutrino vacuum. So there is really some dynamics in the theory associated to this vacuum. There are some new black objects in the theory. The only difference now, because so this object exists due to quantum effect, due to Casimir energy. So actually this is a string. This is kind of cosmic string, but with a tiny opening angle. So we know that this, that opening angle here set by the ratio of neutrino mass to Planck mass. So we know for sure that these objects, they do not exist within our Hubble patch. But still, so there are these new dynamical objects in the theory which exist due to this vacuum. So there is some non-trivial dynamics in the theory which is sensitive to the values of neutrino masses. If neutrino were a little bit lighter, these objects wouldn't exist. So it's kind of amusing. So I think, so this was kind of illustration of what I had in mind by collecting indirect evidences. And so the last point I wanted to illustrate, so I was saying that there are surprises which may be just around the corner. And what I have in mind is the following. So if you look at the causal structure of black hole spacetime and of the sitter spacetime, they are not that different. And so let me remind you, so these are spatial slices which cover these blue lines here, which cover both interior and exterior of the black hole metric. While these spatial slices, these are FRW slices for the sitter universe. That's where landscape is supposed to live. That's where on different parts of the slices, you have these different pockets with different values of cosmological constant. But we know that something wrong happens when one tries to insist on global description of physics in this case. Namely, one concludes that there is information loss during black hole evaporation. And at least in the context of string theory, this conclusion was proven to be wrong by ADS-CFT correspondence. And so it's telling you that actually, after time of what is the evaporation time, something goes wrong with the global description of physics among these slices. So analogy of that in case of the de Sitter would be to say also that in the de Sitter case, so this is analogous scale in the de Sitter space. So something global description of space, the de Sitter space time of this landscape actually breaks down after the number of e-foldings equal to the de Sitter entropy. Or maybe even, in other words, maybe like in black holes case, information comes out of the de Sitter horizon for observer living here. Information about all this landscape comes out in the Hawking quanta associated to the de Sitter horizon. The de Sitter case as well. Now, I would like to say that these ideas could trivially prove that they are wrong if it were possible to have a period of inflation, which is not eternal, so that inflation ends up everywhere. But it can last for arbitrary number of e-foldings. Because basically what I'm saying here, that maybe, so this girl here, after a while, she obtains information about this guy in the thermal quanta coming from the de Sitter horizon around her. But if it were the case, and if it were possible then to stop inflation, and so such that this guy comes back in the causal contact with this girl, then it would be like a duplicating of information, which is not possible in quantum mechanics. So definitely, if it were possible to run inflation for the number of e-foldings and then stop it everywhere, that would be that would prove that this idea couldn't be wrong, couldn't be right. But actually, it turns out that if you talk about conventional models of inflation, so not the crazy ones related to this Gauss condensate theory. In other words, if you talk about models of inflation that do not allow you to violate Naungi condition or do not allow you to violate black hole thermodynamics, in these models of inflation, actually there is a bound on the number of e-foldings during inflation, such that inflation doesn't become eternal, and so basically you cannot have parametrically more than the de Sitter entropy of e-foldings. There is, okay, I don't have time to go into that. So there is a nice analogy between this bound and Poincaré recurrence time in the de Sitter space time. But okay, let me come to my conclusions. So to summarize, I was trying to illustrate. So modified gravity, it's a very ambitious program. So eventually it pretends to really explain to solve cosmological constant problem. So at the moment we have some options for modifying gravity at longest distances, the level which looks consistent with the level of effective field theories. And I think the real issue is whether this series can be UV completed. And definitely there is a rich phenomenology for probes of gravity at long distance scales for gravitational wave experiments, for things like that. On the other hand, landscape, it eliminates cosmological constant problem. It makes it non-interesting question in physics. So it seems to be present in string theory, but I think it's fair to say that we don't know how to really deal with it properly. And it seems to be very hard to confirm, but exactly because of these properties, surprises may be just around the corner. And I find it encouraging, so this, in this both direction, which looks like alternative to start with. So at the end, the most interesting issues are related to the same circle of physical questions, how the whole thermodynamics works, what happens during black hole evaporation, what is the physics of horizons. And so in a sense, modified gravity makes this physics trivial by allowing direct classical extraction of information from behind the black hole horizon. On the other hand, this naive semi-classical picture of the landscape just completely ignores this physics. So maybe the truth is somewhere in between. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, you contrast them, but look, there are many fine-tuning problems in physics besides the cosmological constant problem. So if it happened that modified gravity explains something about the cosmological constant problem, you can still be left with you know, 20 or 30 fine-tuning problems to explain.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that there are some parameters in physics which have fundamental significance, and some which don't have fundamental significance. And we know examples of both of them. And so in this particular case, well, the question is, what kind of parameter cosmological constant is? Is it like the size of the Earth's orbit, or it's more like, I don't know, QCD scale, which comes from logarithmic running, something like that. So this, I think the question here is really whether this is an interesting parameter to think about or not. And definitely, some answer in this case, it doesn't exclude there can be other parameters with different properties in other cases. That's my view on that.
I have a really philosophical question, but so this landscape story, right?
Yeah.
Maybe this is wrong, but still I'm going to ask. So this landscape story, it you need some mechanism to populate these different vacuum.
Yeah.
And that's a thermal inflation.
Yeah.
So now suppose, pardon?
Not only internal inflation, it's not the only mechanism.
Okay.
It's one.
Okay.
Yeah, but at least I think the most naive and classical picture is that one, yeah, that you may have this vacuum in different places in our spatial slices and they're populated by eternal inflation.
Right, right.
Yeah, actually what I was trying to suggest here is maybe this is this picture actually. It seems to be okay at the semi-classical level, but maybe actually it doesn't make much sense at all.
Well, my question is sort of philosophical.
Yeah.
I suppose this non-Gaussian measurement is real.
Yeah.
Then what happens to your faith with inflation? And what does that say about
it? Personally, for me, it would tell that probably inflation is not the best theory. Because it's really, to get that signal with that shape, I don't know whether there's a single model inflation which does that. Maybe with some imagination you can do it, but definitely at that point you think that maybe you're on the wrong track. So.
Because then it becomes really metaphysical, right? I mean, you propose that eternal inflation is the mechanism by which these different vacuum are filled, but then the entire observables of our universe, even going back to our universe, have nothing to do with inflation.
Yeah.
So,
no, yeah, I mean, I think in that case, definitely, you will start seeing it. Something different from inflation. Probably, it's not directly, but just at the level of gut feelings, it would also put some doubts
right on
this picture. That's my personal.
Yeah, I agree with
that. Yeah. So the present situation today is that we have these modified gravity theories, most of them are the unstable problems. And then on the other side, we have the cosmological constant problem. And the cosmological constant problem is possibly due to the fact we don't know how to calculate vacuum polarization in quantum field theory. So if you solve the problem of infrared calculation of vacuum polarization in quantum field theory, then the cosmological constant is the simplest solution.
No, but we know how to calculate infrared far. So we cannot do full calculation, I mean, up to UV, but we see that there are huge infrared contributions coming from QCD energy, for instance.
We say it's possible we don't know how to calculate the polarization of quantum field theory. So that's what causes the trouble.
I'm not sure what you mean we don't know.
Well.
The standard quantum mechanical calculation, which we do always, and it works in other situations like lump shift or Casimir energy. So I see no reason, actually no simple way to change the calculation at this point without really changing the whole of quantum mechanics. So to modify this calculation, you really need some new physics in IR, I think. So
is that? You said that the problem, the CC problem is due to when we don't have a quantum gravity theory.
No, it's not only that. There are two problems. So we cannot calculate it, but there are huge contributions to it which we can calculate. I mean, I don't know, from QD, from QCD, from known physics. And they're really huge as compared to the quantity which we eventually measure. So we need very tiny constellations between them. And it's very hard to imagine how this constellation can come up from dynamics in UV.
Okay, thanks, Sergey, again.